welcome to another exciting episode of CAPS, Auckland's Comprehensive Arts. Sorry, no one could probably hear that because I just kept the sound up, because that's how I roll. I'm going to start again. Kia ora and welcome to another exciting episode of Kick Arts, Auckland's Comprehensive Arts Show, brought to you every Sunday night at Planet FM 104.6, or live streamed at planetaudio.org.nz. Welcome to the show. It's going to be a great one. We've got a studio full of women, which I'm having a bit of a down with the patriarchy day today, so I'm feeling really into that. Not that I don't absolutely love you, Richard. We love you, Richard. We love you. But we are going to start with a song. It's called Tough Guy. It's by a woman called Benny. I saw her play last week on Monday at Laneway, and then yesterday she opened for Lily Allen. She's a local woman, and she's totally fierce, and I love her a lot. Her real name's Stella. She's got a great haircut. Just everything about her I love. So here's Tough Guy by Benny.
We'd end up anyway. Never cared, you left and fear too hard to stay. Control all my wavelengths till I find a better guy. I don't know how you do it to me time after time. I can read you clearly like a magazine. Pictures of your past are visible to me. If I was interested, I'd make that clear, not anymore. You really think that I'm the one to fall for all those lies? Stupid just to think you were a waste of time. I can read you clearly, like a magazine. Pictures of your past are visible to me. He's Mr. Tough Guy. He makes the girls cry. Mr. Tough Guy. Funny how you just assume that my life still revolves around you. Trying to wind me up like that, hoping that I'll grow right back. Kind of funny how you just assume that my life still revolves around you. Tough guy. He's Mr.
What a banger. That was Benny. She's great. Did anyone see her last night?
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, only the very end part of her, to be honest. Not like.
You're like, you're one of those later festival goers?
Yeah, well.
Festival concert goers?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That doesn't really mean where I was going with that. But
great.
Yeah, no, definitely just wanted to see Lily Allen mainly last night. It was pretty dope.
Was it good?
Yeah, she was so cool. It was also like a smaller arena last night. Like it wasn't like fully, they had kind of closed off half of it. So it was like more of a low key environment.
Yeah. They're clever how they do that at Spark. They're such a clever team. How you can't like, you can't even picture what's behind it.
Nah. Yeah. I only knew because I've been there before, but my mate who was with me was like, whoa, that's not the full arena.
It's all drapes. It's incredible. And because sometimes you wouldn't even be able to tell that some of it's draped off because the seating goes up really high.
Yeah. For sure. And they like bring their stage forward. So like even the mosh is just like a little bit more intimate. It was a really nice space actually, and like the crowd that she brought was super chill, not overly rambunctious, which was cool.
Yeah. Was she good?
Yeah, really cool. Like sounded like she does on radio and like in her songs, like really and really cool. Kind of a low-key performer as well, like not a whole lot of banter, didn't really overdo it, didn't have any crazy kind of effects, just did her stuff and it was awesome. Yeah,
cool. I never want to go to shows on Sunday nights.
Oh, well, it was a Saturday night that I went to.
Oh, well, that's fine then.
Tonight is Sunday night.
That just shows how tired I am. That I was like, yesterday is Sunday and so is tonight.
Yeah.
Oh. Welcome to the show.
What a long Sunday.
Hey.
Okay, cool. Well, we have 4 guests on tonight. Sorry, guys. We have 4 guests on tonight talking about 2 different shows. Would you guys mind introducing yourselves and saying what show you are in to talk about?
Mm. Oh, okay. I'll start us off. Kia ora, I'm Courtney, and I'm here to talk about Toil and Trouble, which I'm in with Albie, who is to my right currently. We are both playing Macbeth in our whip bang flash 60-minute version of Macbeth.
Toil and Trouble.
How does that work, a 60-minute version and also both of you are playing Macbeth?
Yeah, so the premise is that there is 2 casts of 3 and each cast has Lady Macbeth, Macbeth and Macduff, and essentially at the beginning the audience vote which cast they want to be, you know, the leads.
And we will be heckling for those votes.
Yeah, like a bit of an interaction time at the beginning where we convince the audience to vote for our main cast and what the reasons are. And then the cast who gets chosen to be the leads, the mains, everyone who didn't get voted plays the smaller characters and then kind of
plays every other role, essentially.
Yeah, and so then, but it's a little bit more interesting because there's a bit of more of a prank environment and some fun stuff involved with that as well, which is pretty cool. And it's all night dependent, so we could be playing Macbeth or 5 nights or 1 or, you know, so it's just who votes who.
That so essentially, Albie's learning the part of Macbeth, which is sad because she won't get to perform it.
And also, we just do, there's, how many parts are we learning altogether as the Macbeth?
I haven't counted.
I think it's 5. So we're Macbeth plus 4 minor characters, essentially, as the lines that we're learning.
No,
only small actors, actually.
Yeah, that's right. And you know all about that. And so we've divided ourselves up into sort of the 2 casts kind of being Team Crown, Team Dagger, and I myself am on Team Crown.
I am on Team Dagger.
And I am performing with the lovely Kat Glass and Luke Fornborough.
Yes, I'm performing with, who am I performing with? Natasha Casey.
She doesn't even
and
know.
And Georgia Hoskins. Actually, I've written all of my information down in front of me, but I've written it sideways. So it's kind of a little bit of an angle game. But yeah, no, so I'm doing with Georgia Hoskins Smith and Natasha Casey. So in my cast, we've actually got 2 trained actors, which is pretty cool. The other cast doesn't.
I'd say that the other cast is definitely the more comedic cast if you're looking for kind of that minor, you know, like coming on, doing a bit part, going on. And then my cast is probably where the serious actors lie.
Yeah, that's why.
In terms of kind of Shakespeare performances, seeing a good part.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to come on, Albie, and do your jokes, and that's good for you, I think.
Yeah, no, that's totally why Georgia's in 50 grand of debt for drama school. To do joking parts the whole time,
which I liked.
We've got some good people. We've all got, it's a pretty cool environment. What's our nights that we're on? We're on from the 19th to the 23rd of Feb at Q Vault, 9:45.
I I was about to say I love that venue, but actually the last time I was in there it was ridiculously hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that will have changed, so yeah. Come lightly dressed.
Yeah, that would be my advice to people, because I think I might have been wearing like a merino or something.
Oh, no.
I get cold. It was Comedy Fest as well, so you know, and it's just starting to get a little bit cold.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's a pretty cool venue.
Nah, it's pretty neat. It's a really intimate space, which is part of the the pros of it all, especially when you're dealing with our like kind of prank environments that we're doing.
Mm.
It leads for some pretty exciting audience interaction and stuff that you can get involved with.
Yeah, I don't know if we've made it quite clear. So in order to get voted in, we will promise the audience kind of whatever they would like to see our cast will do for you. You know, you want me to do a Scottish accent, I'll do a Scottish accent. there. And whoever doesn't win those votes kind of has full permission to go ham, go loose on the other cast and try derail, not derail, but just really make the show challenging for them. Put in some things that we definitely haven't rehearsed and we've just got to adjust, state of time, and then it's over before you know it and you're sweating in your merino.
That sounds so good. Sounds like super high energy and like you just had to roll with the punches.
Absolutely. And the play's been cut down to like 45-50 minutes as well, so it's pretty tight-knit production of Macbeth, which is, you know, always
pretty
digestible.
Bite-sized Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. That's
what
you want,
eh? Does that make it quite hard with the improv as well? Because anything that you bring in, it has to be quite, like, short and succinct. Like, you can't bring in something that's, like, going to be, like, a totally taking off the...
One would hope, yes. We'll have to wait and see.
Oh, man, I want to go to all... It's 5 nights, right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to go to all 5 nights and see.
Yeah, well, that's the thing as well, because it will change every night. Like, essentially, every cast has got a 5-night... 5 different plans of pranks that they can essentially whip up.
Yeah.
Because there is the possibility that, you know...
You'll never go on.
So even if the same team got picked every night for the 5 nights, it would still be totally different.
That's right.
Exactly,
And if you go and you think, oh, stink, that's not actually who I wanted to be the main cast, hey, just come back.
Yeah.
You know, vote your fave cast in, I say.
So this is on as a part of Fringe.
Yep. Fringe Festival, which is all through February.
It is February 19th until the 3rd of March.
That's right.
I know my stuff. I just looked it up. I just double
checked. I just know my show dates, so.
Fringe. But also Fringe is like my favourite time of year.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, eh?
You've got a double.
Yeah, well, we've got in the space that, on the 19th to the 23rd of Feb, in just the Q Vault, we have 3 plays per night that are being performed in that one space. So the first play starts at 6:45, and each plays only an hour, which is part of the whole Fringe.
Are you the middle one or the last one?
We're the last one.
Oh, it's
so hot. So, well...
I'm going to bring a fan with me.
Yeah,
an
we'll
electric
bring some
fan.
Fans. Don't worry, there should be some... hopefully some water involved in the play. So
water.
Maybe you'll get a bit of a splash. So a bit of a cool.
Bring your splash jackets.
Okay, cool. I'll bring a cup of ice. Yeah. I remember last time I was in there, like, I thought I was going to pass out. It was so hot. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, come to our show, you'll pass out.
I'm going to wear like a silk pyjama to your show.
Oh, that's glamorous.
Cool. Sweet. So your show is on as a part of Fringe, the 19th to the 23rd. Also on. As a part of Fringe, the 19th to the 23rd. Shailene and Marianne, please tell us about your show, Tide Waits for No Man.
Tide Waits for No Man. How to describe this show? It's Shailene, by the way.
Excuse me.
All good. Tide Waits for No Man is a non-verbal movement and shadow puppetry and object puppetry show. So it's a really multi-discipline art form show. It sort of blurs the line between dance and theatre. It has a really strong narrative, but the whole thing is non-dialogue because it's sort of exploring the relationship between modern-day 21st century diaspora Taiwanese Kiwi woman and her patriarchal grandfather, or And so it's sort of about that cross-cultural divide, and the way that it was made, it was basically made with one audience member in mind, which was Nikita Tubryant's mum. Okay. So her mum doesn't have a great grasp on English. She's the loveliest person and is just hilarious. But Nikita wanted to make a show that could be understandable across language and across kind of theatre, what do you call it, like theatre readability, I suppose.
Yeah.
essentially a show that's open for anyone and gets rid of that extra layer of not only trying to understand the narrative but also getting rid of the language barrier and making it accessible literally for anyone across the board. Yeah, which I think opens up the creative outcome that people can expect, because I think everyone comes out with different like definition or different realizations when they're in the space. Because how I would interpret it is completely different to how you might interpret it if you come and see the show.
Yeah. There's a lot of elements to it, but it's really cohesive because Nikita, who is the director, she's a puppeteer,
musician.
A musician, so she writes and creates and records her own music, which is throughout the whole show. And she's also a movement practitioner as well. So she's directed and choreographed, co-choreographed with Marianne, and created the Shadow Puppet. So it feels like there's a lot in there, but the whole thing is quite a cohesive, like a surprisingly cohesive experience.
Yeah. And it's less than, is it 50, 55 minutes long?
It's 50.
Yeah.
It's a tight 50.
But you go in there because it's so loaded and there's no time to kerfuffle with words and try people to get to understand what you're trying to say. That those 50 minutes you're in there feels like the same as you would, you know, get in a 90-minute show.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, like, you're able to get in more story, more message in that short period of time by doing the show in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So have you, you've come on board to a show that's already been written. Is that right?
Well, I guess it's hard to write a non-dialogue piece. So I guess Nikita Tu Bryant is the director, and she had the concept kind of brewing for, like, 3 years, I think. And we came on board to help her bring it to life. I think as a creative, you can get really stuck in your own head, and it was definitely happening. She was, like, spiraling around, and I'm a really good friend of hers, and I was like, let's do a workshop. Like, let's just take it in a bite-sized chunk. And so I brought on Marianne, who I work with a lot, and we kind of helped her make it into a visual language instead of something that was in her head.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting bringing in three Kiwi Asians who are all quite multifaceted.
Yeah.
Blowing my own horn here. But yeah, like, all of us had different styles in terms of movement. And we all come from a physical theatre background from all of our different trainings. I know that Nikita travelled overseas to work in
with a Chinese theatre troupe in New York.
Yeah, so definitely she sponged a lot of styles from those places and coming at Unitech, doing the movement training at Unitech. But also the reason I was assigned to be one of the co-choreographers is because I had a previous dance background. So it just kind of worked, and we're all producers.
Mm.
We all write. We're all
the same person.
Yeah.
It's a definite, like, down with the patriarchy moment, as you were talking about before. You're kind of having a down with the patriarchy day. But yeah, it's low-key, high-key.
Very high-key.
Very high-key, if the patriarchy vibes. But
I'd say live a down with the patriarchy life.
Yeah, we're living that life every day, all day, every day. But it's sort of like, because it's pitched in a way that's quite lyrical, and it's quite like, you know, if you look at the marketing imagery, it's very moody. But reading between the lines, it's a really nuanced kind of portrayal of how do you reconcile yourself as an Asian woman with the fact that your cultural heritage is intrinsically patriarchal and is super misogynistic, real sexist, and hella problematic, and it's, like, traditional essence. And, like, how do you reconcile that and be like, I'm embracing my culture, I am a proud Chinese Kiwi woman, but not with that knowledge that, you know, like, you are the descendant from a culture which squashes
there are women. Rules of how to be a woman.
How do you do that? How do you reconcile that?
Good question.
You make a show and figure it out.
Is that quite hard in making the show, though, that you... Because you have no words in it at all, in the show.
No spoken word.
Yeah.
There's a couple of moments with shadow words.
Yeah.
Did
that make it easier or harder to kind of put a message across? Or is it really just discussion? Is it more just, like, putting ideas out there and then the audience can
piece it together?
Yeah.
Yeah, making the audience work.
I think that's I think that's kind of where it is, eh? Because with my last show, I wrote and directed a show called Orientation last year, and it was like 2 hours of like wall-to-wall words, and it was about deconstructing sexual stereotypes with Asian men and women, and it was all about like how hard it is to navigate dating while Asian in New Zealand and just that hot mess. So like I'm really used to working in a way that's like I can say exactly what I want to say. I can like have the room, the space to detail exactly what I mean and have a really complex argument about cultural stuff. But with this show, it's more like we're just throwing it out there and hopefully people can interpret it in a way that impacts them in a way that in a similar way that it has impacted us as we create it in the room.
Mm. Yeah.
We kind of just have to trust that what we're bringing to the table
people will be
is coming
open
from a place
for,
of honesty that translates.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds so interesting and good, and I'm so excited to
it is good.
See it.
You're like, I have no idea what this looks like. What is this?
No, like, absolutely. But that's one of the things that sounds really amazing. Like, because your experience, I don't know what that's like as somebody who's like European Pākehā. So to come and have that opportunity to see something from a different perspective, a different worldview, a different experience, and to have that, like, to be able to sit there and experience that in a, like, a truthful, authentic way, like, that's amazing. Like, and that's one of the amazing things about Fringe, I think, as well. Like, actually creating a platform for people to share their stories, because so often it's, like, the amount of things that were mansplained to me today about what it's like to be a woman, you know? It's just, like, I think I'm just such a, like, I think that's one of the amazing things about the arts right now in Auckland is, like, people being able to share their stories and, like, this, and I think seems like there is a real appreciation and a discussion going on now that people should be able to share their own stories and not have other people share them for them.
Totally. Yes. And I think there's like often binaries that happen when like feminist work is made. It's like feminist work of colour, or is it like feminist, you know, is it mainstream feminist, is it white feminism?
Yeah.
And I think that like the binaries overlap so much in our lives that we don't really get a chance. This is a nice space to acknowledge that and acknowledge that, like, yes, I am proud of my culture, and like I will stomp anyone who tries to tell me that I'm, you know, not expressing my culture in the way that I should, but at the same time I myself have deep issues with my culture and deep shame around those issues that,
and you don't need to explain my own culture to me because I'm also trying to figure it
it's
out.
Like, it's like that thing of just because you're a woman it doesn't mean that you're always right. Just because you're a woman of colour doesn't mean that you're on authority on everything woman of colour.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't still be an asshole.
Yeah.
And be wrong and be problematic.
There's, like, nothing in this whole world that's without contradiction.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, when we can hold on to that and still try to, like, more openly and honestly hear people's stories, it's, like, beautiful things happen.
Yeah.
We can just, like, stop seeing things in such a black and white way.
Mm.
And also just, like, going off your Fringe being such a cool platform for people to be expressive and to just open up conversations, I think conversations like this, which is so layered and, you know, you have to do your research and you have to have insight or background of some sort, I think it is so important to open those conversations up to everyone else rather than just keeping, you know, like, we didn't create the story to tell to just our Asian audience, you know? There's, 'cause essentially we kind of know, or we're all trying to figure out what we're about, and it's just a matter of opening up that conversation, because then that gives it a space for people to acknowledge it, people to start conversations about it comfortably, and for it to, you know, get rid of the stigma of, you know, talking about race and our differences and our similarities and how we can celebrate those things rather than talk negatively about them, you know?
It's like diversity has become like a dirty word recently because people just feel precious straight away. And that's such a shame because it's such, like, so many great things come when people just stop being scared to, like, being scared of change and realizing that actually we all need to do things that are going to be a little bit different. Like, yeah.
And being okay with the fact that our show is also not for everyone. you know, like,
yeah.
And it, I don't think, I mean, for me as an artist, it's not my job to tell a story that everyone will relate to,
yeah,
or that tells everyone's stories, you know, so mm. Which is why I think it's so great to support Nikita's work, because it's so wholesome. It, you know, it has the earnest, lighter colours as well as the heavy, dark things that you don't really want to confront. So, yeah, very nuanced and very multi-shaded in terms of the mood. Mm. But, yeah, also it started as an album.
Yeah, Nikita's a musician, which is why I think the style of the show is, like, it's hard to pin down because she's got all these different talents, but, like, primarily she's a musician. So she wrote all the music for the show. She recorded it, like, in the room, like, a lot of
while
it in the
room. While we were moving
she'd, like,
around.
She'd making these hip-hop beats and we'd, like, dance a thing. And she'd be like, okay, I need to make a music for this scene. And we'd, like, choreograph the whole thing without music. And then she'd be like, all right, what am I feeling in my head that this sounds like? And she'd go away and come back.
She's, like, the most organic person.
That is so cool. She just feels it out because she has all these skills. It's really... Yeah. Interesting. I've never worked like that before.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I love about Friend as well, like, and just that everything you get to see is totally different, but, like, because you've already got this, like, kind of, you've already got this audience that you know there's going to be people that are going to come and see it, even if it's totally strange, like the amount of Friend shows I've been to that I have no idea what it is. I just kind of, like, buy a ticket. But you don't have to sell it. You know, so you don't have to write it in a particular way in order to, like, do a big...
Appease the mainstream.
Exactly. And, like, you really... I had a light bulb moment, Marianne, when you said that the show isn't written for everyone. And I was like, isn't it amazing that we can have shows that aren't written for, like, like the assumed
majority.
Yeah.
This is what someone said to me the other day in an interview for Orientation, and they were like, I was pitching so hard because I was like, I really want white people to come see the show. I really don't want everyone to think that this is going to be a white bashing show and that you'll feel real uncomfortable. Well, you might feel uncomfortable, but, like, in a good way. I just want people to come and enjoy a piece of solid drama that I've worked real hard on. And the interviewer was like, you don't have to justify that it's going to be accessible for white people. Like, when has a white show with a white cast and a white director and a cast of eight white people ever reached out to me and said, hey, this is going to be an accessible show for Asians. Like, don't feel scared. Like, it's not going to be confronting or, like, racist just because there's all white people involved. I'm like, why am I doing this? Shouldn't my show just be accessible because it's a show, because it's a story that I'm telling and I'm a human being and so are you? But, yeah, that's totally the thing.
Goes back to the cliche of you're never going to please everyone.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes art doesn't always have to be pleasing, you know?
I love that saying that you can't be all things to all people all the time. You can only be some things to some people some of the time. I find that saying so freeing that it's like, just do your thing, girl, and it's going to be fine.
And also I find that the people who wants to connect with your work or you or your truth will make their way there.
They'll find you.
Yeah. So don't try to cling on to people who don't really want to be there, you know?
I think the conversations that are happening as well, like, one show that happened last year that really comes to mind happened at Te Po, and I forget the name of the show. I'm going to look it up.
What's
the name
of
the show? The one that they did four different versions of it.
Oh, yes.
The chairs. Yeah, so they did English, Chinese, Samoan, and Māori.
That was so good.
And it was so good. I went to three of them.
Which one did you miss?
I didn't go to the Samoan one. Yeah.
Racist.
How dare you?
I called it. I can't.
So you don't like Samoan people?
Let's talk about that. I was out of Auckland running.
Okay, forgive it. I get it.
A show for kids.
It's layered.
But yeah, no, the cheers is really good. Also, I will say this, not in my defense, but as a thing, if the worst thing that happens to my race is that sometimes I get called a bit racist, life is pretty good.
Yeah,
just putting it out there.
Okay, you don't need to rub it in.
Fair enough.
Hey, life is pretty good on my end too, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm just saying that I know that I've got it pretty easy. You know, I'm not going to get defensive of being joke or racist.
Should we listen to a song?
Why not?
And then I have a question. Does anyone have like a straight up banger that they've been listening to recently that they think that the audience would also like to listen to?
Bangers.
Oh,
Do I listen to bangers?
I feel like I'm so mainstream.
Be good if it's like a Kiwi song.
Oh,
if it's a local song.
Oh, yeah. I could give you a. Do you have Spotify?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Try go XVAYZ. It's X/VAYZ. It's like a bit of an ambient music gig. They're a new.
How do I do this?
Like a forward slash.
Like this.
Yeah.
Do I need to do the dots?
No, just X and then slash VAYZ.
Grandma's, please.
V, not B.
Oh.
Nice. Got it.
Wait, it's a V?
Yeah, VAYZ.
Got there. Yeah, cool. Hey, this is so cool because you're playing me something that I don't know.
Yeah, they're based out of Wellington, local kind of ambient stuff.
Love
real
it.
Real cool sound. Tried Tangle Light is one of the good ones, yeah.
Let's do it.
Nice.
Do you guys like Imugi?
Yes.
Mm. So much.
Totally killed it at Laneway.
I low-key, high-key want Imugi to perform in a web series that I'm shooting in May, if you're listening.
You should.
I love you.
If you're out there.
Yeah, Connor Nestor, if you're listening.
Let's all do shout-outs for our musical crushes right now. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's play.
Do it.
Okay.
All right, we're going now. Thanks. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you.
that was X-Phase. They have got some stuff on Spotify, also on Bandcamp. You should definitely check them out.
Hi, so the next song, I've never done this before, so just bear with me. So the next song that I think George is about to put on is called Tide Waits for No Man by Nikita the Spooky and a Circus of Men. But also Nikita is a solo artist herself as well, and she also has another band called Flight NZ. But yeah, focusing on Nikita the Spooky and a Circus of Men. Check it out.
So is this Tide Waits for No Man, so that's the same name as the piece that you are a part of. Oh. Is this, will we be able to hear this in the performance or nah?
The story that you'll hear in the song, it's in Mandarin, but it's with an English, with a Pakeha or like a Western like kind of construction. So it's like made with a Kiwi band. It's got Western music influences, but the lyrics are in Mandarin, which is like a really interesting contrast. But it talks about the death of an elder, because you won't be able to understand it, assuming you don't speak Mandarin.
You assume correctly.
Okay, great. Neither do I, so there you go. Yeah, so the story is basically the story of the theatre show Tide Waits for No Man, which will be on in the Fringe. So essentially it grew from this song.
Cool. Interesting. Okay. Great, great voice break, guys.
10-minute voice break.
Yeah, okay. Here we go. Let's do it.
等了十年再度见面, 已经十年过去, 好可怜。 他的经验值得学习，他的贡献使人难忘，他的老婆在家等待，好寂寞，独自悲哀，独自哭泣，伤心难过。 一层冷陌生人，独自悲哀，独自哭泣，伤心难过，一层冷陌生人，独自悲哀，独自哭泣，伤心难过，一层冷陌生人，独自悲哀，独自哭泣。 伤心难过，一层冷陌生人。
That was so cool.
Right?
Like, I really enjoyed that.
Yep.
So cool.
Yep. So imagine a whole show, but better.
But movement.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
And shadow, puppets, objects.
Are you doing puppets?
Maybe. Maybe you have to come see the show. Oh.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, but how can will I be able to tell that it's you doing
you
the
puppets? Be able to tell. I can't go on a show and not have my face seen. Come on, Georgia. Everyone needs to know I'm involved.
So there's the story behind that song, Tide Waits for No Man, is the same story that is the piece of performance that you're doing by the same name. Sorry, that's my Siri.
Siri had something to say.
She was trying to join in.
She was like, I see a five woman and, you know, I want to get sick.
It was something about someone called Brett. I don't know.
But sorry, guys. Yeah. Tide Waits for No Man. So, yeah, that's the song that they've released. But the reason that Tide Waits for No Man episode Grace is happening is because Nikita has a lot more many more episodes to come in terms of this series, I would say.
Mm.
Yeah, so this is the first of four, five? Many.
Yeah, it's a strand of a story about the death of the patriarch of the family. So in this version, the grandfather has passed away. And
spoilers.
It is spoiler. Oh my god.
Good one.
So Grace is the granddaughter who is dealing with the effect that his cultural patriarchy has had on her life, but also her love for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the other episodes in the future, in terms of shows, will be told from the view of other people involved in his life.
So it's like you get to know this man from all these other people's relationship with him.
Very cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's all going to be nonverbal, but hey.
So yeah, in this version, it's like the two generations separated, right? So are there any versions that you guys or any of the other strands that have closer generations or even like...
Yeah.
That's very cool.
There's some familial stuff is like...
Very, very
maternal.
Cool. Yeah.
Maternal.
Yeah, because I remember, Marianne, you guys run a theatre company, right? Yeah, and I remember you've done a few read-throughs and you were saying that one of your plays that you've been experimenting with, you had a space where you had three generations, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I've recently just written my first play with Proudly Asian Theatre Company. And it deals with the grandma, the mum and the daughter. Because I think in terms of inclusion, in terms of, you know, the things we talk about, I think the topics of race, sex, generation is also plays a big part in, I guess, our perception and how things come about and so. But yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's very cool.
In terms of, like, your guys and your Shakespeare, like, I know that you guys are the actors in it, but what is the co-papa behind your piece? Because our one's pretty strong. Yeah, and our company's aim is pretty strong.
Yeah,
Proudly
well,
Asian Theatre.
So we've got, so basically the play is being directed by Caleb Wells, produced by Kat Glass, who's also in one of the cast. And Caleb Wells is playing Banquo. He's had he's been doing for years variations of Shakespeare and Edwardian plays. How one of his main passions is kind of making it more relevant and bringing the excitement back and all of that. So in doing this, which is Toil and Trouble, it's kind of bringing Macbeth, and a lot of Shakespeare's writing was when it was written in the day, although, you know, the reason why it's so amazing is because it's so timeless. But, you know, there are stuff, you know, there's a character in Macbeth which is the porter, and I went and saw Macbeth at the Globe a couple years ago in London, and what they had done with the porter's speech is they had completely rewritten it. It was just after, like, Brexit and Trump had been voted in, and they had completely rewritten the porter speech to kind of be about politics and all keeping within the language and stuff. But it's kind of just on that, just bringing Shakespeare kind of relevant back into the day and not making it so scary. Sometimes the way that Shakespeare is taught, we were having a discussion the other night in rehearsal with the Dagger cast, is it can be really inaccessible. Like, you're in an English classroom, like, all sitting at desks, everyone gets allocated a part, and it's quite scary language to read if it's, like, the first time you're encountering it. And a lot of people end up having bad experiences, and it's a real shame, because it's, although it's such beautiful language, if you could, you know, say if you got the drama students to come in and do a reading, it would just bring that play to life. So just...
Shakespeare is meant to be seen, not read. And I think that's a big mistake that high school English plays a part in.
It's also quite melodic. It's like,
It's incredibly melodic. Yeah, it's poetry most of the time. Macbeth's very poetry-based.
Can I throw a spanner in the works? My partner is not a theatre-goer.
Yeah.
And they... have said to me in the past, you know, like, they're like, yep, I'm all about trying to make Shakespeare more accessible. I'm all about, like, I understand when it's modernised, it's revitalised, and it should remain current and up to date, and it was boundary pushing in its day. If you can make it such now, that's kind of the purpose of it. But why bother if it's just an inaccessible, if it's so inaccessible as a language, why bother?
That's a great question, because I feel very confident in this answer.
I'm excited.
It's not inaccessible. All it takes is being, I think we're using the terms reinvention as if we're changing anything in terms to, all it takes in order to access Shakespeare is to hear it done correctly. The jokes are often jokes about, is it past 8:30? Jokes about penises, jokes about sex, jokes about getting drunk, jokes about falling in and out
of love. Lots
of
double entendres. There's so many meanings that you can
I've had a lot of conversations about, like, oh, is Shakespeare flogging the dead horse? And I think, insofar as when you go to see a rom-com and you really like it, you're like, is this flogging the dead horse? Because I saw Love Actually.
I love that saying.
Do I need to see another rom-com? Absolutely. I think Shakespeare is kind of the, like, Hollywood of the theatre world. You know, it is, like, it's mainstream. It's broad appeal.
And
that
on,
being said... Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, on what you were just saying before, it's you're so right about it's... a lot of sometimes when Shakespeare is seen, especially, you know, when it's read in the classroom, as I was talking about in an English environment, you can't just, you have to spend time with those words to kind of actually digest what they all mean. And, you know, as an actor, we go through the script and I know I personally kind of translate it into my own words, so I know exactly what I'm saying at every point. And, the, you know, you can't, especially in Shakespeare, all good writing, but especially Shakespeare, there's nothing in there for no reason. You know what I mean? Everything is said for a reason, for a purpose. And so if you know what you're saying, you can keep an engaged audience. And
Because if you know what you're saying, they will know what you're saying.
Exactly. It's kind of like what you guys are doing with the movement stuff, right? So, like, you're trying to, with the movement, you're trying to get a message across without the dialogue. And we've kind of got a same... barrier there with not having, although it's English and we are using words, it's not, you know, accessible. I'm using quotation marks. I realize you can't see that.
I thought about it, but I was going to bring it up.
I thought the tone kind of implied it. But yeah, no, so it's, I suppose, there, although we are doing such different things, it there is that kind of similarity in that, you know, if you guys are intending with your movement and, like, with your story and the rehearsal process and development, you know, have this strong kind of kaupapa and idea that you're pushing through, then something in that is going to get through to the audience. And there's the same with the, our Shakespeare words. And also with the interaction with the audience, it just makes it a lot more fun and exciting. You know, there's more power for the audience to choose who's going to do what. In my cast, the Dagger cast is an all-female cast, and both of our Macbeth are also female, which is really exciting.
I was just about to speak to that point, which is if there's one thing that we could consider that I think we should totally leave in the past of Shakespeare is the tradition of all-male casts.
Yeah, yes. And it was that, you know, like, that was cool back in the day when, like, females weren't...
I don't know if it was cool.
No.
But it was a thing.
You know, it was appropriate back in the day, I suppose. Like, I mean, you know, in that time era when, like, women weren't working, but, you know, that wasn't... That's just
women
not
were not
anymore.
Legally allowed to act. It wasn't an artistic choice. Exactly. On part, and he wanted the parts played by young boys instead of men. Which, but those points aside, there's in our cast, there's two male actors. Everyone else is female. Mm-hmm. Both Macbeths are female. And I think that's a big part of it too, because I was listening to you guys, and I think your show definitely, it's, I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that it's about a message, because obviously it's not just about that, but it's quite directly speaking about race and about family and about gender and generations.
And I think what I like about Shakespeare is that, maybe less so race, because let's be real, it's Macbeth, it's about people in Scotland. But Shakespeare is, the words are, Shakespeare is speaking about that too. Mm-hmm. Macbeth as a play is fundamentally about the struggles of a family not being able to conceive a child, about not knowing if you believe in a god or not, if you believe in hell or heaven, can you talk to your wife, yeah. you know, like, can yeah. I trust my best friend? Oh, am I mentally ill or yeah. am I being communicated something?
Exactly. I honestly, seriously, in Macbeth, all, you know, hell breaks loose when Lady Macbeth and Macbeth stop communicating properly. Like, you can, yeah. you can literally take away one of the main themes about a breakdown in relationship communication, yeah. which I'm sure we all know is hella timeless. and yeah, it's, you know, there's, and that's why Shakespeare's so amazing. It's got so many themes in it, you know. It's everyone in that room that we have an audience in could take away a completely different message.
And that being said, I think there's a really fun line to straddle between, there's this inherent drama. I remember we were rehearsing the other day, we were rehearsing the final scene of Macbeth. No spoilers. I know Macbeth only recently got published, but it's a big violent confrontation. And as we were rehearsing it, because we're kind of doing it in the tradition of each cast rehearsing it quite stoically, as if they weren't expecting it to be fucked with. So it's all the more funnier when it is pranked on. And as we were rehearsing it, we finished the scene, Caleb, our director, was nodding, and he's like, you know, the thing about Shakespeare is that it's just good without all of our nonsense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's like, I kind of just want to be able to see you do that. But I think the fun of it comes from seeing one group of actors really trying to maintain the integrity of the text yeah. and be like, look, I'm genuinely 100% committing to the emotional truth of Macbeth. And on the yeah. other side of me, I'll be throwing pies at my face.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's kind of like, it's lowbrow absurdism
yeah.
meets what people would interpret as highbrow, but is fundamentally just people getting upset and
that's
crazy.
Something that we were talking about the other day, you know, like in Macbeth, there's that big, you know, is this a dagger I see before me speech, and you've got those Hamlet speeches, you know, all through, especially in Shakespeare, you've got those famous speeches, and people put a lot of reverence on Shakespeare a lot of the times, and especially like those moments and all of that stuff, and I think that the format that we're trying to do this in is taking that away. Like, it's, you know, of course it's, you know, beautiful language that we should revere and to a certain extent, but, you know, then chuck that all away.
Yeah, that's and a point some Shakespeare fanatics, you know? Might be offended by our lack of sanctity
yeah,
around that. I think it's clear listening to us that obviously you know? We're passionate about it, but I think the point is that Shakespeare wrote for peasants standing Absolutely. In the circle as much as he wrote to appease yeah. kings and queens and all that. And I think this is trying to do both as well. If you like Shakespeare, exactly. You'll like seeing it. If you don't really give two about Shakespeare, you know, and you're more like, why should this be put on? Then this is probably a good reason to come see it and think, Absolutely. Was there any point? Like, was there any point to it being Macbeth? Should it have just been absurdism improv
exactly.
with any script? Or was there a point to being... And yeah. I would love to know, because I don't know.
Yeah, that would be really interesting.
I guess there's also probably something in there for people who absolutely hate Shakespeare to see it fucked
yeah,
up.
You know, there's probably some kind of satisfaction.
Exactly, like the dream that they've always yeah. had, like, I just wish that guy would get punched
yeah.
in the
Yeah, what I'd
I
say
no
to that
what he's saying.
Is if you, let's say you come along and you're saying, well, look, I don't really like Shakespeare. If I'm going to vote you in as main cast, I'm going to want to see... You're going to think to yourself, like, I don't know, what would you want to see? What would you want to see
We've
in your version of Shakespeare?
At some point, you know?
You know?
Like, I guess my version of Shakespeare, I've always dreamed of doing. I used to love Shakespeare, and now I'm not so sure. I think I'm very curious about the process to which we, how we, what artists that we revere and we...
Who makes
we carry
it into the canon.
Historically into canon, and what relevance is there in... remaking and reinvigorating old works as opposed to making entirely new ones that speak to our generation, which is what my program is. This is kind of my big experiment for 2019. Like, every single month we're churning out a new play by an Asian writer, a young Asian writer, young / new / new scripts. Some of them aren't young.
Okay.
Sorry, Renee.
she's young at heart.
Young at heart. But yeah, that's I guess what I'm curious about. Cool. But in the back of my mind, like, I always had this dream of just doing an all-Asian Shakespeare and just doing it the reverent version, the solid dramatic version that was just a legit good production.
Well,
but
there's one coming.
Asian people. And I know, there's one coming, and I'm like,
Shanghai
I don't have to do that anymore.
Company?
R.I.P. Like, I don't have to be the one to do that, but
Auckland
I'm stoked
Live
about it.
And Asian New Zealand Foundation and someone else that I don't really know, I'm just... promoting other shows. Shanghai Theatre Company is coming in to do a Asian. Is it?
I'm not sure which one it is.
Yeah, but it's
being
part of
Auckland
Live.
Yeah, Theatre Company. Is it going to be in Chinese?
That's a really good question, Georgia.
Because that would be interesting too. Because it is interesting as well. Thinking of the idea of audience. You know who did they? I've got a question for you. We were talking
for the room.
We were talking earlier about how the piece Tai Waits for No Man has been written for one audience member in particular, and that being Nikita's
mum.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Do you think, because, okay, that's pretty common, right? So, like, I work in the music industry, and the far, far majority of the time, actually, I think every show I've ever worked in, we tend to have one audience, like, we've got a target, you know? Is that a thing that happens in the theatre that you work in, that you have, like, a target?
Yes, for sure. Finding especially a target if you're applying for funding.
They make you do this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 you got it. And also, even if you're not applying for funding, it's also, you know, what's that quote where it's like, specificity is universal, something like about the more specific you can be, the more, therefore, the more universal you become. Like, there is,
is that a quote?
I don't know what it is, but basically, like, and it works. Like, the idea that, you know, Tide Waits for No Man is literally written for Nikita's mum will then probably speak very strongly to a really wide range of people. Like, it's, you know, if you're looking at it, that you could, you know, that's takes it even away, which, you know, we definitely don't want to be doing, but it does even take it away from race. You can, like, look at it as like a story of a mother and a daughter, which becomes incredibly universal, and then, you know, those race elements and the tension of the patriarchy just kind of add even more specificity in that, which is really awesome.
It's sort of like the specificity is the draw. That's
a hard word to say, isn't it?
Yeah, woo. Because I think, it's not that you're taking the element of race away, it's that you go in and you see something and you think, I don't relate to these people, I don't have anything in common with these people, and then they're experiencing universalities within their culture and their community, and you grow to understand those people. You see the people as people rather than a group that you weren't associated with previously, that you had no common ground with.
Well, I think also for me, in terms of the way, I mean, I like to think I shape any work that I get involved in or any work I want to create, is that I think about who I am speaking to, because I mean, I'm not speaking for every artist right now, but I take it outside of myself. It becomes really external for me. Like, what is my purpose of my work? Why am I trying to say this? Who am I trying to move? Because I mean, for me, I would like to think that with the art that I create or that I get my hands, you know, on, it's changing the world consistently, whether it's one person or a room of students or, you know.
I think that's a really interesting point that you're bringing up about the, you know, that's such a strong trope in theatre and, like, artists when they're creating, you know, what are we trying to change with the story, which, don't get me wrong, that has such an important and valid place, but there's also a different kind of version of that, which is like, what are we just kind of commenting on, you know what I mean? Like, which, you know, I think that I'm so with you when you're going to write and create a piece, or you're devising, like you guys are doing, or writing in your own bedroom, whatever, however you create, you should, you know, sometimes you can get really caught up in trying to change the world, and that's a really, you know, it can be a huge responsibility. Like, you know, you guys, which are, you know, a New Zealand Asian woman creating work, artists in New Zealand, you know, although you're now starting to comment on it, which is so awesome, but it's not your responsibility to, like, be the ones to, like, educate people, you know what I mean? It's,
I don't know. I think as artists we have responsibility to fulfill whatever co-bubble we desire.
Absolutely.
And I think if your desire is to entertain, your desire is to reflect or comment, like, sure. But for me, I think art is so pointless unless it has some kind of message or is saying something new or is saying something in a way that we've never seen.
Yeah, but you can have a message right with not trying to change anything. Like, I reckon having a comment on something is, sometimes when, this is all speaking from personal experience, by the way, is, you know, obviously, if, it's sometimes when I look at the work as what am I trying to change, it can feel really hard ass. Like it can get into an area where it can almost into a confrontational standpoint, which is really valid as well and has a space, don't get me wrong. But in doing so, it can for me anyway, it can end up closing it off, and it ends up becoming a little bit more insulated. Whereas sometimes if you look at like, you know, you can't, there's that thing, it's really hard to change people, whereas if you try and, like, put a mirror in their face, hopefully that will do the same thing, which is through the comments.
What I'm hearing is, like, a real binary between, like, creating work that you want to change people and, like, the style or the tone of the work that that kaupapa and mindset ends up making, which I think is, for me, is the opposite. Like, if I have... For example, with orientation, I was like, my goal with this work is to break people's idea of the multitudes of stereotypes against Asian men and women and biracial Asian people living in New Zealand and dating, like sexual stereotypes and dating stereotypes and romantic stereotypes. That's a heavy ass thing to carry. That's heavy as hell. And I could like, I could do it in many ways, but the way I chose to do it was to try and be as entertaining and as in your face and as like... sexually poetic. Liberating.
Sorry? It's quite poetic as well.
Poetic, yes, at times. and as kind of raucous and ridiculous and irreverent as possible. Yep. So the outcome of my thing was like change people's minds with joy and entertainment and laughter and confrontation.
Yeah.
So I think that, yeah, that to me doesn't quite stick.
Interesting, because I think my process is the reverse of that. What you said, because for me, art always starts with a feeling. Like, not so much as in, like, what am I trying to... Because I... not in the sense that I don't like political works, because I love them.
Yeah.
But in the sense that I know my politics. For me, art has always come from, like, oh, God, what am I feeling? What am I internalizing? And instead of... perhaps selfishly so, instead of looking at, like you were speaking to about... who is my audience? Who am I trying to talk to? For me, it's like, what am I trying to work out? Like, why is this character coming to me? Or why does this role appeal to me? Or why does...
What am I processing right now?
What am I processing?
And then I don't think that's different either.
No, I don't think it is, but I think we've framed it differently, and that's what's interesting, because I don't see it as political, and then it's like I string it out differently from you, right? Like, you start with the idea, and then you find the feelings, and then I'm like, this is the feeling, this is my gut reaction,
and then
I make a pick, and I'm like, oh, that's entertaining, or that's funny, and I start to make something around that, and as that happens, because it's come from me, inherently it's political, right? Because people live in the world and the world is political.
Yeah.
And for me, the message finds itself. Like, I think fundamentally this may sound like incredibly plebeian of me. I'm a big believer in like entertainment for entertainment's sake.
Yeah, I reckon there's a space for that.
100%. I reckon there's a big space for just like people should be able to feel joy.
Yeah. God, it's so hard. It can be hard. It can be a hard world, as I'm sure we all know. And there, you know.
But I think you can have both, and
if you can have both, why not?
That's why I don't dig entertainment for entertainment's sake, because I'm like, you can always have both. Why not always have both? Because that's 100 times more interesting to me than something that doesn't have layers to it, that's not going to stick and ring in my mind in multitudes of ways.
I think I'm very interested in the subtext of that. So something that is because of course I mean something. I'm not, when I say entertainment for entertainment's sake, I don't mean something that's like a clown dancing on stage with no message. Although actually I would quite like to watch a clown dancing on stage. So maybe I am getting at that. Maybe I do enjoy raucous sheer insanity.
I agree. I think that there's a place for that. And even if you're looking at kind of a lot of like the premise of but like base for like forms of theatre, like you know, like musical, right? So like that, I mean, that wasn't entertainment for entertainment's sake, because it came with an incredibly political background, all of that stuff, the vaudeville, all of that, how that stuff developed. But you know, there's even, I think that you're right, I think that in this world, because it is such a complex world, even in creating entertainment pieces for entertainment's sake, you're inherently going to create a political
something political
or something with a multi-layer, because if art is subjective, right? So everybody will interpret that clown dancing on stage as something completely different. Yeah. Everybody will go to like watch a clown dancing on stage, and everyone in the audience, I love
it. I'm going to make a show that's just me in a clown outfit dancing on stage.
Oh yeah,
it's 90 minutes long, and people are so suffering yes. of something's going to happen now. It's just do a clown dancing
yeah,
on stage.
Yeah, let's just do that. But no, but everybody will, everyone in the audience will kind of put a backstory to that clown on stage. They'll be like, why is, you know, that clown won't have to, you know what I mean? And it's just,
even just
that's
how
what,
refreshing it is to just not see be a clown thinking about
that's
shit.
Also what
for
I think,
like,
you know, like why are reality shows so goddamn popular nowadays, you know what I mean? Like yeah. that.
Well, I don't think we should liken it to reality.
No,
shows.
No, I don't think so. But there's a space in this world because it's so full on, especially with social media and all this stuff. Of we get an overwhelming stimulation and influx of stuff all the time. I think there's a space for to turn your brain off sometimes, and I think that it's needed. Whereas if you do that via meditation, if you do that through reality shows, if you do that by imagining a clown dancing on stage, you know what I mean? Like there is. So, I don't know.
I think just to add to Chai Ling's point, I think one of the reasons that there always seems to be an agenda to the things that we're creating, I mean, having worked so closely with Chai Ling with Proud Asian Theatre Company, is that the things we're trying to create always has something to say because we're the ones trying to create the platform. For our voice right now, like in terms of not carrying the weight of, you know, a whole nation on your shoulder. Like I'm currently, you know, wanting to put on a first Filipino Kiwi bilingual, if not trilingual, but bilingual play. But that is so loaded on agenda because at the moment, as far as I'm aware, there's only so many of us that can do that. So it's almost like a mission, but again, yeah, not bogging myself down with the fact that I'm the only one who can do this because I personally believe that what Proudly Asian Theatre Company and what I'm trying to do and achieve is to make the platform so wide that I don't have to keep talking about the same, not talking about the same thing, but trying to amplify the stories that I'm trying to put on.
Or amplify the agenda of the story.
Yeah.
Because it's always put under a microscope and you're the first one doing anything.
Exactly.
And that's why I think it mildly enrages me when, like, theatre doesn't have a purpose, or I see the same Roger Hall play go on again and again and again.
Well,
ABC,
I think
because that's
fair.
The money maker.
Yeah, I'm not talking about
because
Roger Hall plays.
Well, that's the thing. That's like entertainment for entertainment's sake. For
but who's entertained
by
that?
I don't agree.
People 50 years and up.
Those,
that is
Roger
the main
play,
audience.
Those Roger
that
Hall
the
plays,
money.
Although I find them pretty awful myself, but they're not my shtick. They were originally not written for entertainment's sake. They were written for a purpose and they
totally.
Did have a message.
But
the problem
in this day and
is
age,
now
in the
they
context
are not
of
timeless.
19, they
exactly.
are not timeless.
Exactly. They are not
in fact,
equally
they are
anymore.
Like dangerously dated.
Yes.
Like they're pushing dangerous messages.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that it enrages me when I see art without purpose because that is such, to me, that is such a luxury. And I think it speaks to what you're saying. Like, even if you're creating a story, Marianne's story, Panay, is about her own personal experiences. It's born from her life. And it is simply the story that she's telling from her heart. But yet, we don't have the luxury for it not to be political, for it not to have meaning, for it not to be weighted with the nation of the Philippines and New Zealand on our shoulders. We don't have that luxury because we ain't white. And we ain't white men.
In that sense, it's, I don't want to say I'm trying to fight for a space for me to have my voice heard, but if anything, I'm fighting for thousands of people's voices to be heard. Because Filipinos, just various, it's a show about me now. Filipinos is the fastest growing Asian population in New Zealand. I don't know if you guys knew
really?
That. Yeah.
I don't know that at all.
Hello, Filipinos are a thing. And that's the thing. Like, when was the last time y'all heard a Filipino show happening in New Zealand, in Aotearoa? Like,
never.
Invisible never. Minority, crickets. Crickets, even though crickets. You're the majority.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So I, for me, it's so, yeah, the luxury of finally having a platform and to be on sort of a level up, you know, to start something. So I think when it becomes so normal that Asian art alongside, you know, Shakespeare is a thing, when it doesn't stand out because it's so
special.
You're right,
because it's unfair that it seems like it's an agenda work.
And we are in such a political world, right? And you guys are so right. And imagine if we just, like, you know, these white privileged people just keep on putting theatre on for art, for entertainment's sake, and we eventually just end up fucking people off. Hopefully you guys will end up getting the political audience. But there is, you know, it's really... You know, you're so right. There is, we can look at that entertainment for entertainment's sake as a level of a much in more level of lightness than you guys can, because we are white, and that is a complete reality that is really good to always be aware of. But it's but it doesn't excuse that we are completely ignorant by any means of that as well. And I think it's just a really good thing to be aware of that, you know, maybe even, you know, like the entertainment for entertainment's sake has a place in shining a light on that in itself. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's still happening, and that's still happening and being able to be done. And why is that able to be done? And you'll be looking at all the stuff that's being made for entertainment's sake, and it's usually all white. You know what I mean? It's all, and you know, usually it's written by white men as well, but there are, you know, it's inherently mostly white. So
I guess, like, what, like, this is my question about Shakespeare is, like, I have a beef with Shakespeare because of the Pop-Up Globe and because of that whole debacle. I love Shakespeare before Pop-Up Globe. I love studying it at UniTech. I pick it up really quickly, and I, like, you know, I dig
it. One of my favorite
plays, but just like the institution of that ruined me, and it got me thinking about the wider, like, all the time, all the effort, all the money that we put into Shakespeare reproductions every single year. There's always loads in community theatre. There's always one or two popping up in the main theatres. Is like smatterings. Like, you guys are doing one for Fringe. Why is the same effort not being taken to go, I'm going to make a new New Zealand play that is uplifting a marginalised voice, or that is made by a woman, or that is speaking to something that is 2019.
It's also
because we live in a capitalist society where people aren't willing to take risks also, on new writers that they know won't turn a profit.
Yeah, also there is...
I mean, yes, agree.
Yeah, I know, reality. I'm just saying I completely I recognise that reality.
People don't really take
And I think one of the cool things about, like, the company that we're talking that's all Asian that's coming to do Shakespeare, or this company that's primarily female, is that at the very least Shakespeare is getting people in to see artists... Not the Pop-Up Globe, but we won't go into that. But traditionally, Shakespeare in community theatre gets people in to see artists that maybe wouldn't otherwise be seen. Or if they do go in and say, I've got this cool, amazing script. I mean, you guys know about this. It doesn't get funding. It doesn't get picked up. It doesn't get chosen. So that's a benefit. And also in terms of entertainment being, like, entertainment for entertainment's sake, being a kind of, like, position of privilege, it's interesting. Like, this year I'm going into a Masters of Screenwriting, and I'm writing a kid's film that I consider to be very kind of like, it's for fun, it's bolshy, and without me really thinking about that, that kid's film is about two women falling in love. And that's obviously going to, if let's say I try to push this script, I try to get it made, there is no children's princess film about two women falling in love. There is no space for that. And maybe it's, I think maybe it's my personal philosophy in terms of, like, I'm just willfully going to ignore that that's not a space until it is one, you know, just push it. And which I think is the same thing that you guys are doing, you know, maybe.
I think
not at all in terms of they're totally different intersections of privilege, but I think, you know, whether it's like lesbian art, racial art, God, whatever you want to call it, art, it's just different ways of, like, because it's exhausting, right? Like, it's exhausting to feel like the art you want to make isn't what the world wants to see. And so I think maybe I've gotten to the space where I'm like, nope, it's just entertainment, because I'm sick of people looking at us or you or things like it's political.
Is it your way? It's almost your way of subverting the burden that you feel by expressing a marginalised voice.
I think
saying, like, also, fuck it, I'm just
fuck
doing
it,
something fun, that's fun,
right? Like, it's fun, and you're going to watch it, and kids come see this fucking film. And
but I don't think that, like, people should ever feel like they need to divorce the two. And I think it's sad that people, that you won't sell a show unless you're like, don't worry, it's not going to challenge
worry,
you. It'll be fun, but it won't kill you.
Like, I don't think that's by any means what we're saying as well. I don't think you have to divorce the two at all. But what we're saying is that it's okay to be able to have that for a space as well. And also, just on the Pop-Up Globe thing, because, you know, man, I've got my own gripes with that too. But I will say, because what you're saying is, we mentioned before, is like, why Shakespeare? You know, like, why are you doing it now? Before the Pop-Up Globe came to New Zealand, Shakespeare wasn't done so heavily as it is now. Like, in the past kind of 3-4 years since it's come to New Zealand, we had, you know, like, Elkin Theatre Company do Midsummer Night's Dream every 4 years or something, but it was, the plays of Shakespeare were nowhere near as prolific as they have been since they came. And
there's Auckland Uni one that kind of got squashed by the Globe.
Yeah, so I was in the year that got squashed by the Globe.
No. As
so
was I.
Yeah, no. So both Courtney and I were in that year, so it was a real shame.
Yeah.
I did the last one.
The last summer Shakespeare.
Oh my God, so we had to reimburse. Exactly, we got a month into rehearsals. With Auckland, so it was a Auckland Uni, summer Shakespeare, and we got a month into rehearsals, and because of the way that the pop-up Globe had been selling tickets, and because they have such long, prolific seasons and amazing publicity, Auckland Uni and all the people who were funding and helping our production just decided a month into rehearsal and a month out from shows that we had no money and no space to do it. So our venue was pulled.
Actually, you're cut.
Yeah, you're cut. You're just like, we're not going to do it. So we had to, like, a bunch of people therefore, and because of that, was up in the air for a couple weeks. I ended up having to pull out because I got a few other job opportunities that were a lot more solid, and it was all very scary. So, but it ended up happening on the Auckland Uni Yard, but it was, you know,
so, yeah, we had to pull it together ourselves. So funding was and pulled. And essentially it was just the group, all female cast.
All female cast. And that was the year before they, you know, that all male cast of Auckland. And it was just, it was so disheartening. It was, and so in saying that, but what I'll say is I remember being, I've loved Shakespeare since I was wanting to be an actor. It's been my favourite thing. And it's always something that brings me back to, like, my acting roots and why I want to do it, because I really love the language. It's a huge passion of mine. So I remember just being so excited in these past 4 years to have a space to do Shakespeare again, I suppose. Like, and if you're wanting to know why, that for me is almost enough of a reason. Is 4 years.
It's the poetry of it, isn't it? Yeah. It's the poetry and the drama.
We're both now in a space where two females get to play Macbeth. Like, I don't think I will ever get that opportunity in the next 50 years again. I was lucky enough in 2014 to be part of Young Auckland Shakespeare Company, and I played Lady Macbeth. But you know, this is so cool. And like, because of the pop-up Globe, because Shakespeare's so kind of marketed at the moment, so prolific, and, you know, everybody who wasn't going to theatre, who wasn't interested in Shakespeare, is like, yo, pop-up Globe, how exciting! It's now created a space where we can start fucking with Shakespeare, with Toil and Trouble, you know what I mean? So now we get to start, like, you know, actually having a space where it's started having a big enough conversation in our day and age that we can start, like, you know, actively fucking with it. I remember 7 years ago saying to someone, when I was doing Macbeth, I told them I was doing Macbeth, and one of the people I was working with, who just, you know, wasn't an actor, just was involved at working at a bar, they were like, what? What's Macbeth? I was like, you know, Romeo and Juliet, the guy who wrote that also wrote Macbeth. And it's, you know, it's just like, there's, you know, that I think that I haven't had that conversation in the past 4 years, which has been really cool. People know who he is.
The show sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
It will be so much fun. That's kind of like the biggest thing. It'll be a fun night. And that's really cool. Like, because I remember we were rehearsing the scene after Macbeth, spoiler alert, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth kill the king. They kill the king? It was the scene after that. We were rehearsing that the other night, and we just, also, this is really cool. Everyone involved in this production has a huge passion for Shakespeare, which is really palpable. And we were just finished rehearsing it and blocking it. We were like, man, wouldn't you be so stoked if you wrote this good a scene? Wouldn't you just be like, yo, this is a great writer? Wouldn't you just be like pumped with yourself that you wrote that good a scene? We were just like all just really appreciating how good that scene was. And like,
now you guys gonna do that scene and just totally mess with
and
it.
It'll just be ruined. We didn't actually get to do that
but
scene.
But because it is actually, you know, it is a tragedy, right? But we're bringing
There's
in this
nothing
huge...
funnier than a tragedy. I've always said that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
A little bit of satirical humor there.
But just black comedy. Yeah. It's very funny what happens to them. It's very funny the way they break down, and it's very funny the way that the Globe and other institutions wouldn't let women portray that for some reason, as if it was for 1950s or indeed. The 1700s.
I'm pretty sure, like, everybody is on the same page about that now. Eh?
Yeah, I reckon
it used to be an unpopular opinion that I wasn't allowed to voice, even though I was very eager to.
I reckon everyone's on the same page as well. And, like, don't get me wrong, like, you can do a all male cast, you know, just like doing all female cast as well. No, because that's just the shtick, right? Like, you just kind of do both. Like, it's not that hard. And, like, it's I think it's going to be a super fun play. And because it is, you know, you get the moments of that tragedy plus the moments of hilarity with all the pranks that are going on. You know, it's Lady Macbeth's sleepwalking scene, which then, you know, the next scene she proceeds to kill herself. You know, God knows what's going to happen when she's trying to get the blood off her hands. You know, like, there's lots of really fun pranks that we've got some cool ideas for.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to try to come along. Now, sorry, I've hardly said anything for 90 minutes, but it's just been, like, the best discussion. I've been really, really enjoying it. But we are coming to the end of the show now, so it is time for shameless promotion.
Yay.
I am curious, what time is your guys' show on?
9:45.
And what time is your guys' show on?
6:30 p.m.
So people could come and
do
see
both.
If people could do both, yeah. Because it's on the same. Yeah.
And I'm like, how shows? We can double bill. We
and
go
you
to
can have dinner in the middle.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Are you guys at Q Theatre?
We're at the basement main
space.
Oh, look,
it's just next door. The basement is my
basement
favorite.
Main space.
So great. Yeah.
Basement main space.
They got some great aircon.
Yeah. And we should just. Yes.
It was so good.
Yes. Bring it's a jacket loud. To their show. Bring a jacket.
You can wear your merino. There's no middle ground.
It's
either
underneath.
Freezing or boiling.
And I'm very aware we're four voices. So the 6:30 show is
Tide Waits for No Man, episode Grace, written and directed by Nikita Tubryan.
Mm-hmm. And that's at the basement, main,
basement
space.
Main space.
Where
yes.
can people find tickets?
iTicket, or just go on the Fringe website or the Basement website.
Which, just by the way, disclaimer, I was just on the Basement website, and if you go into the program, it's the 2018 program, so you have to go into a list of all of the things.
Or what you could do is go on Facebook and like Proudly Asian Theatre Company, and we're also on that.
Which you should do anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
I'm going to do it right now.
Do it. Yes, Georgia. What a good example.
We also have a very exciting and ridiculous concept for our play reading series of 2019.
Fresh off the page.
Last year. So our play reading series is called Fresh Off the Page. It performs, we do live readings of scripts by Asian writers every month at the Basement Studio for free. So you can just come along. If you follow the page, keep you updated when those are. But
everyone
year,
is invited.
Everyone is invited. You don't have to be Asian. We're not going to stamp your Asian card before you can get in. Please, it's all inclusive. But what we our concept for this year is that every month a new script is born. So,
speaking
of
that month,
sorry?
Written that month?
Not written that month. At the end of last year, we did a call out to Asian writers of any ability. Mm. We assessed their abilities to complete a script by the given month that we assigned them. We have given them mentors. We are partnering with Play Market to do mentoring for these writers to complete their first drafts of a new script.
Because again,
it's be read aloud every month. For the entire year.
And is that at the Basement Studio?
The Basement Studio, yeah. So by the end of 2019, we will have created 10 new plays by Asian playwrights.
That's incredible. Can you tell us who the playwrights are? Or are they like getting
They're on the website, the page. Go on Proudly Asian Theatre. We've also got a website, so check us out,
so
man.
Because,
you know, you get sick of the conversation of there's not enough of this and that. Mm-hmm.
This is where it is.
Well, this is
if you're looking for it,
we are making it.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, and Toil and Trouble is going to be at the Q Vault.
Yep,
that's 9:45 p.m.
Vault's the one downstairs.
Vault is downstairs. You'll see little stairs. You'll think, am I descending into hell? And the answer is yes. It will get very, very hot.
Oh, yeah.
And I will be there yelling at you.
Yeah.
It's from the 19th to the 23rd of February, and you can find us as a Facebook event. And you can go like our production company's Facebook page, Millions of Deaths.
Yes.
A suitably anonymous name.
Our Facebook page is Toil and Trouble at Auckland Fringe Festival, if you need to find it via that. And our ticket link is on there. Ticket price is $20 to $25.
But you can also get tickets on the Q website or through the Fringe site as well.
Another way to find all of this information is that over the next couple of days, probably tomorrow, depending on how onto it I am, because sometimes I can go a little bit late. I will be putting up a post on the Kick Arts Facebook page that will tag all of our amazing guests and all of the shows that they have coming up. And also I'll tag the music that we played tonight. And
that'll be up over the next couple of days, so you can go in and find the tickets and all of the dates and everything information through that. You can also send us a message via that Facebook page, Kick Arts, if you want to come on and talk to us about something that you are doing in the arts community, or if you just want to say hi, that would be fine too. I'd like to clear it. Marianne would like to clear it. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you don't have Facebook, you can send us an email, kickarts1@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram that's developing.
Yeah.
We just need one of the three of us to really take charge of that.
Was kickarts@gmail.com taken?
Did you have it? I must have been.
Yeah. So just to clarify, the three is Richard, Georgia, and myself. Also
world's best producer.
Wow.
Honestly, I've worked with
I'm an actor, guys. I'm also an actor.
She is the most onto it person, honestly. Yeah. 5 emails per day, per hour.
She's really good. I'm so on top.
Also, just want to say hi to my whānau in Christchurch, because this is the first time they're hearing my voice on radio.
Oh, cool.
So, hey, Mum, I love you.
Shout out.
Sorry, Marianne's parents that I swore.
It's cool. They love you.
Okay, cool. I am just going to go out with a song. I'm going to dedicate this one
to me.
To Richard, actually.
But
it can be from us.
All right,
to Richard. To Richard. It's my favourite song with Green in it, because his name is Richard Green. And it's by Kiwi Act. It's by a Kiwi act called the Electric Confectioners, who won Smoke Free Rock Quest back in the day. Now, just this is a little self-plug. Tomorrow, we are launching, I work for Smoke Free Rock Quest, we are releasing a song by our last year's solo duo winner called Estella, and it is so amazing. I heard it, the final mix, for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and I can't stop listening to it. Woman will absolutely, she's, I'm gonna call her a woman because I'm like trying not to use the word girl, but actually she's 17, she's a total powerhouse.
This young woman,
she's a total powerhouse. She's amazing. So go, also when you go to like Kick Arts on Facebook, also go to like Smoke Free Rock Quest, so you can see her absolutely stunning video when it comes out tomorrow. She'll blow you away. She's awesome. Anyway, here is a song. Green and Blue, going out to Richard, and all of you listeners. Make sure to go out there this week and kick some art.
All painted green and blue, shades of tide brings in to sing for you, and only for you. Sink like stones beneath the waves and disappear like people made of sand. Wouldn't that be grand? But everybody takes that all the way. That rendition, the new face of the day. But everybody fakes it anyway.